Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Indie Business Podcast. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Well, you know, ladies, in case you have been not noticing, maybe you've been living under a rock, hopefully not, but you would have had to have been living under a rock not to know how exciting it is to see so many women starting amazing businesses around the country, across the world, really, today. Such an exciting phenomenon. I think it's a sign of not only current times, but also what's to come. If you read any statistics in any local newspapers, in any nationwide newspapers, in any Small Business Administration releases and local small business connection releases around the country and chambers of commerce, you will see that women are starting businesses at a staggering rate. I think twice as fast as the national average, which essentially means twice as fast as everyone else. And I think this is just such a wonderful thing. And today we're going to be talking about and celebrating that, and in particular talking about single women entrepreneurs. Our guest today is Erin Albert. Dr. Erin Albert is a business owner, a writer, assistant professor, and a student. She owns two companies and is the director of the Robordi Center for Community Practice at Butler University College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences. A pharmacist, she is also a law student at Indiana University School of Law in Indianapolis and a 2010 fellow of the Program on Law and State Government. She currently holds a BS in Pharmacy from Butler University, an MBA in Marketing from Concordia University, and a Doctor of Pharmacy from Shenandoah University. She lives in Indiana, and she also actually has time to write books as well. And I'm so excited to tell you about the book we're going to be talking about today. It's not our only one, but this is the one we're going to be talking about today. It's called Single Women Entrepreneurs. And Dr. Albert is going to share some of her insights from interviews from single women entrepreneurs across the country about how they're successful, and she's going to share some of their best tips with us today. Welcome, Dr. Albert.
Thank you, Donna Maria.
I'm just really excited to have you here. So tell me this. Why did you write this book? You know, there's a lot of books on business, a lot of inspirational books, people starting business, women starting business. You chose to focus on single women. Tell me why.
Well, about a year ago now, I took a trip to Beijing, China for law school. And if you get on a 14-hour flight, you know you got to take a stack of reading with you. And one of the things that I took with me was a report put out by the Kauffman Foundation looking at gender and entrepreneurship. And as I studied this report that they put out, there was a little figure in that report about marital status and starting businesses. And the intriguing thing to me was that divorced, single, and widowed women actually started more businesses than men in those respective categories. And I started, you know, asking the big question of, well, why? And I looked through the report, and I never really found a good answer. So being a single woman entrepreneur myself, I decided that wouldn't it be cool to study other single women entrepreneurs? So that's kind of where the idea came from.
And I'm so intrigued by that notion. And, you know, I know in my own work with small business owners as a coach and a mentor that there are many women that are single. And, you know, just to categorize the different ways that we sort of appear in things, you know, we really have women who are single that have never been married that start a business. We have women who, as you said, are widowed. We have women who are newly separated or divorced who are starting businesses. And do you notice any sorts of interesting combinations of commonalities among these types of women, even though they may be in different personal circumstances, being single? What are some of the things that bring them together to start a business despite their differing circumstances?
Well, a couple of the questions that I asked each of the 30 women that appeared in the book was, well, what do you perceive as your biggest advantages and disadvantages to starting a business? And because these women are single, they said their biggest or greatest advantage in a lot of ways was the flexibility, that they had a lot of flexibility when it came to their time, for example. The biggest disadvantage that a lot of women perceived was being single does not allow me that second income or that other person to rely upon. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I have to rely upon myself. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the major consistent themes I found throughout the 30 women and their stories. And some women, you know, are divorced and they have children, or they've never married and they had children. And, you know, finding that balance was one of the reasons they actually started their businesses.
And one of the things that's interesting today, Erin, I'd like you to comment on this if you noticed this in the people that you interviewed or just in general, is that because so many men are in this economy losing their jobs, I think we're seeing more women who are married. They're not single in a marriage sense, but in an income sense, many of them are, or they're looking at the possibility of being in that situation in their businesses because their spouses are, you know, cannot count on employment as, you know, today as they may have in years past.
Well, it's really interesting. One of the women in the book I interviewed, I talked about this because she was divorced, and she said she promised herself when she was married to a husband at the time who started his own business that she would never, ever start her own business. And then she ended up divorcing and ironically, 2 years later, started her own business. So I think there is a lot of pressure out there based upon the economic downturn, but it's also a positive. And, you know, one of the trends that I definitely saw was these women not only in some cases are starting businesses, but they're keeping their day jobs too. So there's kind of a safety, if you will, in them having multiple careers going on simultaneously.
You know, and that is so fascinating. And I think, do you think part of that has to do with health insurance? I'm just curious about that. I read an article in the Washington Post yesterday about the new health care law, which is supposed to go into effect in a few years, but who knows what the court system is going to do with it. But in any event, the whole commentary was about how so many people are may start businesses after it goes into effect because they'll have access, supposedly anyway, to more affordable health insurance. And that is one main reason why so many people are keeping the job that they have and not pursuing a business full-time. It's not because they like their work so much as it's because they have health insurance there.
Yeah, I think the benefits, and particularly healthcare, is one of the biggest reasons a lot of these women are not leaving their day jobs, or they're holding down a part-time job just to have the healthcare benefits while they're building their businesses on the side.
And what motivates these women, Erin? Is it something different from what motivates non-single women? Are you seeing same sorts of you know, desires to build a business and be independent and have more control over your life? What makes them different in some of the ways that they pursue their entrepreneurial ventures?
Well, I think the biggest interesting aha I had in studying these women were that most, if not all of them, never said money was the primary reason they started their businesses. They either wanted to solve some kind of problem that they saw in their own life, and or needed to create or recreate their working lives. As an example, some of the women came from Fortune 500 companies and had great paying day jobs, just like yourself in the past, from my understanding, Donna Maria. Mm-hmm. And they got to the point where they were banging their heads against the glass ceiling, and they had to make a choice. You know, do I want to stay in this mold of corporate America, or do I want to leave it and recreate my own notion or idea of work? So I think the working world as we know it is changing right in front of our eyes, and these women are kind of trailblazing their own career paths when it comes to how they work, when they work, and having that flexibility as the built-in piece of their businesses.
And, you know, I that is what is so exciting to me. And you are right in the midst of it, working several businesses yourself and in school and doing so many other things and connecting with all of these amazing women. What do you think, Erin, as a person who has studied this in such depth, what do you think this means for the state of the American economy as we look, you know, to the next several decades, and also to the state of the, you know, the American communities where families are concerned?
Well, a lot of authors have already written on this, and I think the way that we do work in this country is, again, it's got to change. And what do I mean by that? Well, you know, the new career safe, in my point of view and many other authors' points of view, is that we have to become slashes. We have to have people doing multiple career paths simultaneously in order to create the new career safe. 30 years ago, people thought, I'll go to college, I'll get a great job at a great company, I'll work there for 30 years, I'll retire and get my gold watch. We all know that that notion of the working world is dead in this country. So those who are moving forward and are going to be successful in the future are those who are doing multiple careers at the same time, if that makes sense.
Oh, my goodness. It absolutely makes sense. And, you know, I talk with my children about this all the time. And my husband and I talk about it as well, because we're in that sort of time frame in America. We come from, you know, our parents worked, you know, for a long, long time at a job, and they retired, and everything was great, and they got, you know, lots of retirement benefits, and they were there for 30 and 40 years. We came along at a time when those jobs were still available. When we graduated from college, there weren't as many of them, but certainly, you know, the idea was to get your resume, and you get a job, and you stay there for, you know, at least 10 years. You know, it wasn't like a 1 or 2 year thing like it is now. And it's fascinating to me that our children are growing up in a world where when they get out of college and they're producing their resumes, even if they even have resumes anymore, I think more of them will have like blogs and Facebook pages to professionally portray themselves. But, you know, they are going to, as you just said, have to understand that, and they'll see it all around them, right, because we're seeing it now. The generation that I think is kind of you know, having a little bit more hard time of it is the ones who are coming out of college right now, because they're sort of in the in-between stage where everything is changing, and you can still get a job and you can still find one that, you know, you can stay in for a long, long time. But there aren't as many of those, and then there aren't as many of any other kinds either.
Right. And, you know, it's really interesting, because that's the project out of this book, and one of the themes, this notion of being a full-time employee, part-time entrepreneur, is the next topic or subject of my current book that I'm working on, is this whole notion of people who have full-time day jobs and are starting a business on the side, because it's the new career safe. They can build an empire kind of on their side, you know, is their side passion, and they also have the benefits of having this full-time day job.
Mm-hmm.
But even, you know, in pharmacy, I teach pharmacy at a college of pharmacy, and I tell my students, you know, healthcare is a relatively stable profession.
Mm-hmm.
However, you never know. So what are you as a pharmacy person or pharmacist going to bring to the table that makes you unique and different? And one of the ways that you can do that is you can become a hybrid careerist. You can have more than one, you know, degree, one type of profession behind your name, and you're going to bring value to your employer, to your business, whatever it is that you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of the practicalities associated with running a business as a single woman. You were talking about, and you interviewed people in your book, that have at least one child. They are single. They are holding down a full-time job or maybe a part-time job, and they're working a business. So childcare is just a huge issue. How are these women handling that, Erin?
Well, I think actually, and ironically, a lot of them with children decided that they wanted to start their own businesses to have flexibility to care for their children in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of them talked about the fact that they can kind of work around their children's schedules and be there and be present when the children get home from school, for example. But then when the child goes to bed, they can go back to work.
Mm-hmm.
And in corporate America, per se, they couldn't necessarily do that. They didn't have that flexibility built in. So a lot of women who had that lovely corporate America job, you know, that stability, said, enough is enough. I need to be here and present for my child. And they're redefining, again, back to the theme that we've talked about earlier, they're redefining how they do work
mm-hmm.
so that they can accommodate their children and their lives on top of their work. So they view themselves as this whole person rather than just this work identity, and then I go home and I'm a parent, as a separate identity, if that makes sense. So they're trying to figure out how to make their lives more whole, if
mm-hmm.
that makes sense.
Oh, it absolutely. I know that the audience is just right along here with you, Erin, because this is exactly who we're talking to is people, whether they're married or not, really women who have decided that whatever lifestyle they have in terms of parenting, that they really want their lives to represent sort of a wholeness and a synergy of all that they are, and not just chopping it up into pieces where you're a mom or, you know, a person at home from, you know, 6 in the morning when you wake up till 9 when you get to work, and then from 9 to 5 you're this other, you know, person, and never the two shall meet, and then you come home and you take off that hat fully. And I think that's one of the most wonderful things about where we're going today, is that it is about empowering yourself to be the best self you can be, whether that includes parenting, whether it includes entrepreneurship, whatever it includes for you, is the freedom to write your own script. And what's lovely about your book is that it tells the stories of so many women, and also how they're supporting each other in these ventures. And I love seeing, what are you seeing in terms of how we are reaching out using the internet and also in our local communities to support each other so we can all be more successful?
Well, it's interesting. Some of the trends that I saw, not so good and good, around capital is, and this is not earth-shattering news, but women are grossly underfunded when it comes to their businesses. Mm-hmm. So a lot of women are trying to figure out, and one of the women talked about this specifically in the book, that how to run and start a business is one skill set, but how to raise capital for the business and take it to the next level is a whole different set of skills. And I think that's an opportunity for us as a gender, if I may, to say that we need to train ourselves better on how to go to different sources of funding rather than our friends and family. And the women in the book did a pretty good job of getting friends and family engaged in their businesses. But to take it to that next level, venture capital and angel funding, I think there's tremendous opportunity to get women to those tables. The other interesting trend I saw was that a lot of women are great and start their businesses around this idea of community, coaching and consulting. A lot of C's there, but they're great at helping other women start and develop their businesses. So they're actually creating businesses to help other small businesses get started.
That is, of course, so exciting to me, because that's what I did when I started my business. I was working at a law firm, and I was like, what about all these small businesses? We can't serve them. How can we serve them? And, of course, the answer was, well, $400 an hour, and the answer was, of course, that's not possible. So it's interesting that you say that. I'm looking at some of the stories in your book. There's a story about a woman who makes flowers. I think her name is Lily, and Becky.
Yeah, Becky Ruby.
Lily's flowers. Yes, one of the youngest entrepreneurs.
She's very young. She's a Butler grad as well, so I had to put that plug in. But she's also really interesting, and she's created a floral shop that's kind of like a social business in that it's sustainable. So she only orders her flowers after she's received her orders from her brides, because she does a lot of wedding flowers. Mm-hmm. So she doesn't keep flowers around her shop waiting for somebody to buy them. She only buys them fresh, ready to go after she's done the business, so to speak. The other great thing about Becky is that she's also working part-time, kind of on the side, to get a lot of her benefits in order to grow her business. And now her business is actually to the point where, you know, she's looking potentially to have more space, to have a full frontal retail outlet for her store. Mm-hmm. So she's actually taking her business to the next level, but she's doing it in her own way, in that she's working part-time and she's got this full-time sustainable business as well.
Now, Erin, in reference to what you were saying earlier about funding and, you know, getting loans and financial investment for a business, you were talking about how women sort of, and again, like you said, it's no news, sort of lag behind in terms of that. One of the questions I have for you is, do you find that many of the single women that are starting businesses, while they may be interested in finding out more about how to get a loan, for example, but they're also finding that there are these other ways, as you just mentioned, what Becky Ruby is doing with a part-time job and some other things, there are other ways to accomplish the same thing on a slower scale, not as fast as you would if you got an infusion of several thousand or several hundred thousand dollars in cash, but are you finding that they want to have this kind of slow expansion, and that they might not be looking into financing the way non-women may?
Yeah, you know, it was really interesting that a lot of women aren't necessarily in this book willing or really want to build an empire, so to speak. And, you know, being an empire builder, I think, is very different than starting a business for flexibility reasons or bringing your whole self to your work or having a family as well as, you know, your business. And these women, in a lot of cases, are growing their businesses kind of slowly over time using friends and family funding, so to speak, and or their day jobs to kind of fund and support these businesses. But they don't necessarily want to get to the point where they have to hire, you know, hundreds of employees and become a megacorp. It's really interesting, and it depends on the individual and what it is that they're looking for. But some women actually crave that variety. Mikkel Allen is the perfect example in the book. She runs Butterfly Consignment, so she's in her passion is, you know, fashion and recycling, but she's also an attorney and she's also a mediator, and she loves all that variety, and she doesn't necessarily want to sacrifice one for the other.
Yeah, it does make sense, and I love the sound of it because I think so many of us, you know, as you said, it's not just about the money and building an empire, although, you know, I would certainly not say no to that. My children are very young right now. It's not something they – well, actually, I may say no, but I wouldn't say no without looking into it. Do you know what I mean? And I think there's a lot to be said for having the flexibility, as you say. Once you do have, you know, a multimillion-dollar empire, you lose a lot of that flexibility in many respects, if not of your time, then certainly of your money. And how it's invested, and you lose a lot of the control, and it's a trade-off to some extent. Erin, I think we may have a question. I'm going to open up this line here and see if we have a question. Is there a caller there? I know there's someone there, but they're not saying anything. So, of course, I have many questions, so I'll ask for them. So, Erin, you know, tell us what you think in terms of, you know, how women are making these decisions going forward. Are you seeing that so many people are doing this that I'm just wondering to what degree corporate America is going to allow this, what seems to be becoming quite an exodus of women from the traditional workforce? And this has been happening, I think it's been a slow roll for a long, long period of time. But I'm seeing it, and I'm wondering if, you know, if you find in your work and in your research that corporations and, you know, America in general are going to make any adjustments to try and keep this talent, because we have a talent problem in this country.
And as
young women graduate from college and come out of school and see, you know, wait a minute, you know, I could go work there and I could make, you know, $100,000 a year, and maybe I will for a minute. But you know what? I'm going to set myself up for something else. I'm going to have a part-time job as my business. And when I'm ready to make that move, it's going to be, you know, thanks for all the, you know, the health insurance. I'm going to go chart my own course.
Yeah, it's one of the kind of $64,000 questions that I left myself from in doing this project is that I think this is a wake-up call to corporate America. If we really want to keep our best and brightest in corporate America, we're going to have to rethink how we do work in this country.
Yeah.
Again, best and brightest, you know, entrepreneurs tend to be very intrinsically motivated. They're passionate about what they do. And that translates in any work, you know, be it a full-time day job, a part-time day job. They're going to come at it with 150%. So if you want to keep your A-gamers, you know, in big corporate America, you better figure out a way to try to let them do what they need to do on the side to feed whatever part of them is missing from that corporate day job, be it creativity or more flexibility, whatever it is that they need, and be accommodating, because otherwise you will lose them.
Yeah, and just really understanding their need to grow. I remember when I was working at a law firm, fantastic job, as my girlfriends and I used to say, making really stupid money. We were just, you know, for what I was doing, it was insane. And I remember I went to my managing partner and I said, you know what, I have been asked to write, you know, an article for a law review, in South Africa where I had visited, and I was so excited about this opportunity. I thought the firm would be happy because it could get them some more notoriety in the country where I had some really good connections. And I remember the response to me was this: Aaron, sure, you can do that, but you have to do that on your own time. We're not, you know, and I was already, you know, billing out, you know, some astronomical number of hours a week. I'd have to do that on my own time. And I remember thinking, this is a really good job. I'm thankful for a good job. God knows, right? You're thankful for a good job. But but nobody wants me to grow here. No one wants me to stretch my wings and see what I can do to help this practice and build myself up at the same time. And that was a wake-up call for me because I thought, well, if I'm just a number, if I'm only here to bill hours, that's nice. I get paid really well for doing that. But that's not fulfilling for me.
Right. Right. And you know, the flip side or the counter-argument.
Yeah.
The counter-argument to that is, well, if you let your people get creative, start businesses, do things on the side that are going to fulfill them, they're going to bring an even better level of work back to the day job.
Yeah.
They're going to be bigger picture thinkers. They're going to see things, you know, how they fit into that big picture because they have to be as entrepreneurs.
I
so
agree.
There's definitely advantages to letting people do what they need to do on the side in order to bring their A game back to the day job.
Right, right. And my goodness, there's only so much control you can have over a person when it comes to, you know, them feeling as though they're fulfilling their life mission and pursuing their own purposes. Another thing I'm seeing, Aaron, just in our last few minutes here, is this awakening of women around the world. I mean, you know, the women in the Muslim countries that we're dealing with, driving situations, and the new laws that are passing in other countries having to do with making sure that, you know, women are safe and they're not in abusive situations. And I just am seeing this awakening, and of course in my reading have seen some well-respected leaders and commentators talk about women being the ones who are ultimately going to rise up and you know, create the next generation of what we need in this country.
Absolutely. Grameen Bank is another excellent example with microloans.
Mm-hmm.
Even here in Indianapolis, we're doing microloans through our chapter of the SBA now, which I think is fantastic. It's giving people opportunities to become entrepreneurs that never had the chance before. And think what an amazing world this could be if we could all, you know, follow our passions, and entrepreneurship being one of those.
Absolutely. So, Erin, in closing, what would you say to the single woman who's listening to this show, and she has a passion, she has an idea, and she has a job, and she's thinking, oh, I really want to pursue my passion. I can do this. I see people around me doing it. Erin's talking about doing it. Donna Marie's talking about doing it. But I'm a little bit scared because I have a son, and I really need to make sure he's okay. How do you encourage that woman to do what she wants to do and take the bull by the horns, Erin?
Whether it's starting a business, whether it's advancing your career, whether it's, you know, making a better family, you got to get educated. That's first and foremost. So what, you know, classes are available in your local community to get started? SBA has a ton of chapters throughout the U.S. on how to start a business, build a business, how to create an idea and take it to a business level. Find mentors that are the people that have been there and done that. And, you know, that transcends gender as well. Look for people in your local community who are doing what it is that you want to do or that you might want to do in the future, and take them to lunch or buy them a cup of coffee and pick their brains. Surrounding yourself with people who are where you want to be or where you want to be in the future, I think, is the best way to educate yourself on how you can actually bring whatever your idea is to fruition, if that makes sense.
Such good advice. Such good advice from Dr. Erin Albert. She is the author of Successful Women Entrepreneurs, and you can find her on Twitter, actually, at Yuspie, Y-U-S-P-I-E. That's Y-U-S-P-I-E. And, Erin, where else can we find you on the net? Where do we go to get this fantastic book and learn more about you?
Well, the book Single Women Entrepreneurs actually has its own Facebook page. So if you go to Facebook and type in Single Women Entrepreneurs, we'll pop up there, and we have daily bits of education and wisdom around what these amazing women are up to.
Excellent. Well, we want to make sure that you do that, so you can find on Facebook Single Women Entrepreneurs. Also, make sure you Google And you'll find lots of links, including Amazon and Barnes & Noble, where you can buy her book and also learn more about her work and all the fantastic things she's doing there. Dr. Erin Albert, thank you so much for joining us on today's Indie Business Podcast. What a fantastic topic and an inspirational as well. We'll see you next week. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.